Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. Sometimes things go wrong. On any system, doesn't matter what system it is, things go wrong. For that, there is xkill, at least on Linux, or on any system running X11, I guess. There's xkill that this ships with. That's the package for today, the first package for today. It ships with the X11 stuff, or at least it's packaged with that in Slackware. And this is a really handy device that you can use to just click on a window that has, for whatever reason, frozen or stopped responding in some way, and it makes that process go away, at least in theory. I mean, if you've ever used the kill or the kill all command in a terminal, then you know that sometimes things, you know, you stop one process, but a process that it was forked from doesn't stop, or a process that got started by that thing doesn't stop, whatever. So sometimes it can be a little bit messy. It's not great to have to kill an application, but xkill makes it easy. So if you type in xkill, you know what? Here's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to type in oclock ampersand so that I can start a little clock. And then I'm going to type in xkill just in case I can't remember how to get out of it. My cursor changes to a little red skull and crossbones. And yeah, I guess it is probably, oh no, I could do Control C to cancel my xkill. Okay. But I'm going to do xkill again, and then I'm going to click on the clock face and it goes away. Just gone. It tells you it's killing the creator of resource 0x, in this case 8C0007. So it gives you a little bit of data about what you have just killed. But realistically, the point is it makes the bad thing go away. And that's really useful. It's a useful little command, especially because just for several users, for many users, it's not realistic to sort of expect them to go into their terminal and do pgrep or pidof or psaux and grep. You know, it's just not, that's silly. Xkill, click the thing, it goes away, you keep going. That's brilliant. All right, next up is xload. This is a system load monitor. When you first launch it, it's deceptive. It looks like it has just launched a blank window containing nothing but your host name, and that looks like an error. And I launched it several times thinking, the graphic's not loading, what's wrong with the graphic? Well, it does load to an empty screen or empty window. If you leave it on your screen long enough, if you leave it open long enough, it does start to draw a little graph as it monitors, as it takes, you know, assessment of the system load. You can make it update faster when you launch it at launch time. There are a couple of different options. Some of them are kind of really interesting. Let me focus first on the update. So xload-update and then some number of seconds. So by default, it monitors the system. The minimum amount of time allowed between updates is 1 second. The default is 10. There it is. So if I do update, I don't know, 2, then I get a mildly faster. I can't believe that this is that much. Maybe it is. That's 2 seconds compared to 10. I don't believe it. Okay, I'm going to go down to 1. Boy, it's just not very fast. It's just not fast. It's a slow little graph. This is noticeably faster though. It has progressed more. So anyway, this is a load monitor. You may have seen widgets like this for other things. There used to be a couple for, within, I think, GK Realm, there are window maker widgets for load time or load, what is it called? A CPU load, processing load. There's certainly a couple of different ones on the Plasma desktop that you could add. I used to have one running down in the corner for a very, very long time until I realized finally that I was never going to I was never going to run out of resources on this computer. There were times where I would be processing video and just thinking, well, this is going to max everything out, and it just didn't. So, I mean, that's a great thing. I love that. That's fantastic. No complaints there. There are other options, as I alluded to earlier. You can do a, you can adjust the scale, you can adjust the label, or not having a label on the window. But the really interesting one that caught my eye, and I couldn't get it to work, is dash lights. So xload space dash lights. When specified, this option causes xload to display the current load average by using the keyboard LEDs. For a load average of N, xload lights the first N keyboard LEDs. This option turns off the usual screen display. Now, my keyboard only has like three LEDs, and I was not really ever sure when, like, I waited around and I didn't see anything else light up. So I don't know how that works. I don't know whether that works. I think it's a really cool idea. I mean, that's really neat, but no, couldn't get it to work myself. Or I did, and I just never got to the load threshold that would, you know, like, trigger the next LED to come on. I just don't know. So anyway, that's xload. Xlogo is next, and this is this displays the X11 logo. You can change the foreground color, the shape of the window. Those are resources, so you would need to use something like, what is it? Edit res. You can change the sharpness and even the way that it's anti-aliased. It doesn't really explain a whole lot about how to do any of those things, so I'm not really sure what kind of values it's looking for necessarily, but this is clearly one of those sort of, you know, a demo app, obviously, or maybe not a demo app, but like a test application, right? You don't really need the X logo, but if you do want to play around with rendering options, or if you do, you just need something on screen to prove that something is responsive, this is that kind of application. So I mean, I wouldn't want too many of these, but I don't complain when they do exist. I think they're important to have. Okay, next up is XLS Atoms. I was about to say XSL Atoms, and I'm going to probably say XSL several times in the next couple of packages, because that's how I see, or that's a common, XSL is something that I'm thinking about frequently enough that takes over when I see XLS, XSL, it just blurs together. So it's XSL? No, it's XLS Atoms. This lists the atoms of, I typed XSL Atoms even after all of that, after I said, okay, anyway, XLS Atoms. It lists atoms. What is an atom? Well, an atom in X11 is a data type. That's just the name of a data type that they decided to use because they needed some term for a collection of information. Specifically, as defined in xdefs.h in user include x11 xdef or xdefs.h. It is a type def unsigned long atom. That is what an atom is. It's a long integer. So that's what, 32 bits? And what this number, this integer, does is it identifies a string which you're going to use in code. XLS atoms, if you type that in, it gives you a dump of all of the atoms in your environment currently. Whether that means anything to you or has any importance to you as a user, probably not. But atom 1 is primary, 2 is secondary, 3 is arc, 4 is atom, 5 is bitmap, and so on, down to all the way down to 849, which is pirate. That's kind of fun. Yeah, I don't know what any of those mean. None of this makes any difference to me. Like I say, they're strings being identified by an atom. If you want to see those atoms for some reason, then you can do XLS atoms and you'll see them. Next package after that is XLS Clients, which displays client applications in your current session, or you know, running on a display, I guess, is how the man page says it. So this is kind of an interesting one, I guess. I mean, if you do X LS clients, you do get a list of client applications. I've got XDG Desktop Portal GTK, Firefox, Signal Desktop, Vert Manager, and Audacity running right now. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 applications. But if I look at my my little, what's this called? The system, no, taskbar. If I look at the taskbar, I very clearly have more than this. I've got a Dolphin window open. I've got Elisa open. I've got contact open. Well, you know what? That's actually running in the background. What if I... No, that is actually... Yeah, that's definitely like... That is a window. So I'm not exactly sure why this doesn't list those items, to be honest. There are a couple of different options. There's dash A to show all screens. That's not a problem because I only have one screen, so dash A doesn't do anything for me. Dash L is a really cool little option. This is to list in so-called long format, which gives the window name, the icon name, the class hints in addition to the machine name and command string in the default format. So let's try that. XLS clients dash L. And all this is nice. It shows your host name, it shows the application name, and the actual command that you, well, you may not have manually typed, but the one that was, that's in the, at least the .desktop file that gets, you know, on the exec line. It shows you the name of the icon. That's kind of nice. I mean, I think in practice, it's probably going to be pretty predictable, but if you've ever, you know, done your own .desktop files for any reason, or, you know, manually assigned some icon, or you just like an icon and you're not really sure what that icon is called, XLS clients dash L. So that's a nice one. Like I said, I've said in the past couple of episodes, I really like these introspective, like, tell me more about what I'm seeing kinds of commands. I just think that that's really useful. One more XLS related command or package rather, and that is that contains the command XLS fonts. This lists the fonts that X11, I guess, is aware of, which is a weird, you know, specific subset of fonts that you actually have on your system. Because remember, X11 itself kind of like natively doesn't really do TTF. I mean, it can do TTF, OTF, all those other things, but I mean, it doesn't, like, the X11 system does not appear to natively sort of inherently do that, if I'm understanding things correctly. And as far as I can tell, this is a subset of fonts, not inclusive of your TTF font. So yeah, the normal fonts that you would have on your system for daily use with like LibreOffice or GIMP or Inkscape or whatever kind of fancy graphical application you might use that actually have like modern day fonts on them. These are all those kind of bitmapped fonts that just aren't, I mean, they're barely fonts at this point. XLS fonts lists those just one after another in a big long list. So pipe it to less probably. You can get more information though using this is weird. This is the second time. Oh, it's just a really delayed response. Wow, that's weird. Okay, so XLS fonts dash L gives you like extended information about each font. Once again, well, first of all, it has this weird delay after you press the return. Like it looks like your terminal is frozen. It's really strange. There's no like processing message or any, it just takes its time. So that's really weird. But you do want to process this, put this through less or more, or a pager of some sort, because there are column headers for the dir, the min, the max, the exist, the DFLT, the prop, the ask, and the desk, and the name. Nope, don't know what any of those are. So if you want even more information, you can do dash LL, and again, process that through less. And this gives you really quite a lot of information that makes a lot more sense than those heavily abbreviated column names. For instance, name dash Adobe dash Courier dash Bold dash O dash Normal dash dash 0 dash 0 dash 100 dash 100 dash M dash 0 dash ISO dash nope, no dash 10646 dash 1. Direction left to right. Indexing matrix rows 0x00 through 0x22, that is 0 through 34. Columns, more numbers. All cars exist, no. Default car, 0 or character 0x0000. Ascent decent font type. This is a monospaced ink outside bounding box. Bounds, those are lots of numbers. Properties, Foundry, Adobe, family name, Courier, weight name, bold, slant, O. It looks like an O. Yeah, that's an O, not a zero. Set width name, normal, and so on. It goes on and on like that. Copyright notices, what the license is. Really useful stuff, actually. This is the kind of thing that I wish you just could have. I would like this for all fonts. I would also like it to be a little bit more targeted. Let's see if there is a way to target a specific font. Like, can I just get this information on literally one font? Doesn't seem like a pattern. This option specifies the font name patterns to match. Yeah, okay, that would be a way to do it, I guess. I mean, I could try. Let's do dash FN for a pattern, and we'll just do Courier. And no, okay. So it wants like a lot. Okay, there you go. So quote, asterisk, Courier, asterisk, quote, then you just get the stuff back from for Courier. So, oh, and wait a minute, there is a free type rastered font there, so it does do TTF. Why is it telling me the resolution then? That's suspicious to me. That's a bit weird. And this isn't all of my fonts, so I mean, for instance, I know that I have Overpass installed and there's no match for that, so yeah, I'm not sure. Liberation, of course, I think there is an X version of Liberation anyway. What about Noto? It sees Noto. Okay, I don't know where this is looking for its fonts. I'm confused. There's definitely font type, true type, rasterized name, free type. So it is aware of some fonts, but apparently not all fonts. And that confuses me because other applications on my system are aware of all fonts. And I would have thought that XLS fonts would be aware of all fonts. So this is definitely a little strange to me. And unsurprisingly, the man page doesn't explain to me where it's getting this information. It's just asking me to take it on faith that XLS fonts understands where to look for fonts. And I just don't know where that is. And this is, that's the kind of reason, that's why, if there was maybe a XLS fonts dash dash info or list or something to tell me what you're looking at, that would be hugely, hugely useful. But I'm not going to go on that path again. I think I've made my feelings about that sort of thing clear. I like introspective commands. I think they're very useful. I think they're important. I don't think it's fair or just to expect the user to just understand where, you know, how the back end of an application is working. That should be something that you expose to the user on demand. Okay, so let's talk about XMag. This is an interesting one. It seems kind of cool, and it is kind of cool. It's you launch, you type in XMag, and now you're in XMag. You have a little box, a little square on your screen. Your cursor essentially becomes a square. Maybe, I don't know, let's call it 48 by 48 pixels, maybe? Or, I don't know, maybe more, maybe less. I don't know. And you can probably control it. I'll get to the man page in a minute. But you click somewhere on your screen, and it takes a little snapshot and presents you with the snapshot magnified, hence XMag. Man, XMag, it does an enlargement. I am not seeing, as I'm skimming really quick, how much it enlarges, but you can do dash mag and then give it an integer to specify what magnification to use. Oh, and there it is. 5 is the default. So it blows it up 5 times, I guess. And it's a 64 by 64 square, not 48 by 48. So 64 by 64, but you can adjust that, as I kind of figured you could, dash source geometry. So I could do xmag dash mag. Let's do 10 times. Dash source, let's do 128 by 128. Yes, this does look like a larger box now, and it's definitely bigger when it shows it to me. So I don't know, I guess if you just want to see a pixelated version of what you're already seeing, and understand this isn't like This isn't, because, you know, there are magnifying tools on modern desktops. And many of those are the kinds of things where you just, it's a live, it just blows it up. And wherever your cursor is, it magnifies that region as if though you were looking through a magnifying glass. You have the magnifying glass, but you can't see through it until you click. And then you take a static image of what you clicked on. So it doesn't feel like an accessibility tool, because that would be extremely slow going. If you needed to blow up a zoom into an area of a screen to read, I mean, you'd have to sit there and launch XMag and take a picture, and then you'd look at like the first five words of a sentence, and then you'd do it again. And for the next five, you know, that just wouldn't work. So I imagine this is more of like a design tool where you're adjusting the layout of an application. You just kind of need to see, am I a pixel off there? And so you click XMag, or you type in XMag, and you look at like a close-up view of that. I don't see how this is very useful in this day and age. Like I say, there are so many other tools. I have F7 and F8. Yeah, F8 magnifies, it just zooms right into my desktop and follows my cursor. F7 zooms back out until I get to a normal size. I use this all the time for presentations. When I want to zoom in on something, when I'm giving a technical talk, I just zoom in just like that. It impresses everybody. They don't know how I do it. And I'm like, oh, I do it with the Plasma desktop because I'm running Linux. Okay, so there's also, let's see, the X-Man, not X-Mag, but X-Man. This is a manual page viewer for X. This is one of those really like kind of puzzling applications that I don't really understand. And we'll see a couple of these within the next couple of packages, I think. Or maybe that's after, when is that? Now. We're seeing them now. So I'll explain that in a moment. But X-Man itself is a manual page browser, and it launches one of these little funky X windows, like apparently it's the Athena widget set. I don't know why I keep calling it XFT and XF and other things. It's the Athena widget set. That's the official name. I saw it in a man page somewhere. And it has three buttons that say help, quit, and manual page. So you might think, well, I don't need help. I want to see a manual page. So you click on manual page, and it shows you a man page for X-Man. That's actually pretty good, because then you can read about the application you're using. So I find that extremely, extremely salient and sort of progressive. Like, that's a great idea. Like, let's show people how to use this application when they go, you know, but their default landing page is how to use this application. Anyway, at the top, you've got two menus, options and sections. Now, interestingly, on Slackware, and probably on lots of systems these days, but interestingly, by default, you only have one section, which is user commands. That's man one. So if you click on that, you do get a listing of whatever is in this man one category, wherever X-Man is pulling that from. And it's an odd sort of assortment of things: jar, J, Deperscan, JPS, Serial Ver, Jar Signer, J Deps, J Runscript, Java, and so on. So a bunch of Java stuff, a bunch of anything. Key tool, there's a key tool that doesn't start with a J at least. So yeah, it's kind of a weird collection of a small selection of man pages. So it turns out that X-Man is looking at manpath as defined by I don't know what. I mean, it's not my manpath. I'm quite surprised to discover that this is my manpath. But manpath, echo $manpath in a terminal shows me that I've got /man. Is that even a location? What is that /man? That's not a thing. /home/clatu.sdkman. That's an application for Java, like Java versioning management. /candidates/java/current/man. So that explains why I was seeing all those Java applications. You might not see that. You might have your man path set to something reasonable. I legitimately don't know why my man path is set to that assortment of, oh, here it is, right here. Well, no, that's the thing where I'm adding the Java man path. I don't know where my personal man path is being set. I don't feel like I set it myself. I'm kind of frantically looking in all the usual places, those being bash rc, dot bash rc, and dot profile, and I'm just not seeing it. So I don't know what that's, where that's coming from. I have resolved to look into that, because that's not the correct man path, and it should not be the man path. Anyway, you can either set your man path correctly by putting into your .bashrc export man path, all capitals, man path, equals slash usr slash man. I think that's correct. I mean, that's correct. Is that a symlink, or is that the actual place? That is the actual place. Yeah. So slash usr slash man. That's what you actually want, probably, as your man path. And indeed, if I do set that, I'm just going to do it really quickly here. Man path equals slash usr slash man, and then space x man. Now if I click on manual page, I still get the x man initially, but if I click on sections, I've got all the sections. 1 for user commands, 2 for system calls, 3 for subroutines, 4 for devices, 5 for file formats, 6 for games, 7 for miscellaneous, 8 for sys administration, and in for new. That's interesting. So now if I go to like 1, for instance, there's a bunch more man pages listed than before. So that's kind of nice. And then you get to just struggle and struggle and struggle with this X interface, because it is just atrocious. And I mean that in a loving way, I guess. Even the little scroll bar, like can you really not click and drag on a scroll? Oh, you have to middle click and drag on the scroll bar with the Athena widget set. Otherwise, you can just click to make it go further down. And then you click on something and it takes you to that man page. And you can do a scroll wheel. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't think that was working. It's not working out here. Once you're into a man page, though, you can do scroll wheel to scroll. So that's nice. So anyway, that's X-Man. It is I'm going to do section in for new. Did anything happen? It says I'm in a section called new. What is new? I don't know. It's got things like TD, append, arg v0, autoload, bind, case, concat. I would be curious as to what that is. I don't know what this is. Anyway, that's X-Man. It's a viewer. Let's go take a coffee break, and then let's come back, and I want to talk a little bit about these little X applications, because I'm seeing a pattern in some of them, like X-Man and XMH, which we haven't gotten to yet, but we'll get to right after the coffee break, and after a brief discussion, X-More, X-Edit, things like X, what was the other one, X-DITView or something like that. I'm noticing something about them. It's causing me to think. I may as well discuss that over coffee. Okay, I'm back with coffee. Hopefully you are as well. As I mentioned before the coffee break, I'm looking at these X11 applications, these things built in this weird white, black on white Athena widget set. I'm curious about the motivation for them, to be honest. And I'm wondering, once again, as you may know, if you've heard this podcast before, I grew up using Macs. Like that was we had a Macintosh, or an Apple really, and then sometimes a Macintosh. So that was my experience with early computing. So I never really knew a computer interface without a GUI. Well, that's not true. An Apple IIe, 2GS, they didn't have GUIs. I don't. Well, no, the 2GS notably did, right? That was the big deal. But the Apple IIe didn't have a GUI, so I guess that's not quite true. It still felt like a very sort of graphical experience, but I could just be misremembering. Either way, I remember there being GUIs for, like, you know, for the impressionable years that I was using a computer. I remember GUIs. But I also remember, like, in, like, I don't know, 95 or something, maybe it wasn't 95, but, you know, early Windows users, like, I remember there being sort of a little bit of an uproar over DOS getting a GUI, which was called, I think, Windows. And so, and I think I vaguely remember people wondering what the value of a GUI actually was, kind of like, these GUIs are, they look okay, but what does it add to the user experience? And I mean, these were normal computer users, right? Back then, these were people using computers, typing commands in, finding that to be a fairly quick way to use a computer. And I guess there were some sort of mock GUIs as well, kind of those incurses style applications where, yeah, it's not, you're not typing, you're using arrow keys to navigate an interface. So that's kind of a GUI, but that GUI layer, the actual, you know, the graphic server and the widget set, like, what does that actually add? And looking at these applications like X-Man, especially X-Man, I think that was the one that really made me think about it, but also this weird one that'll come up pretty soon, X-More and XMH, and then even arguably something like X-Edit, like, what are they adding to the user experience? They require a fair amount of, like, configuration, and the configuration is kind of almost, I'm going to say, uncomfortably transparent, which, I mean, I don't really mean it's uncomfortably transparent, but I mean, like X-Man, in order to get it to do the thing that I wanted it to do, I had to set an environment variable, and then I'm just like, well, why don't I just use man? Like, and it's the same basic experience, right? I type in X-Man, or I type in man and then the name of the manual I want, and then I get to view it. So what's the difference? How does it help me to have that little GUI application? And we'll see that in a moment too with XMH, a mail application, like a mail interface for, like, you know, early, I guess you could think of it as like early Thunderbird, but it's really more like a weird graphical mutt or something. But I would imagine that if I had been a user back when this was all happening, I think I might have been on the what's this GUI for? Like, how does this help me? What is it doing for me? Maybe multitasking, maybe that helps. Certainly X-Man in its man page specifically says that it's designed to start up in a very small window so that you can just kind of keep it open up in a corner somewhere. And that way, when you need a man page, you've got your little man page index card, you know, your Rolodex right there. You can click on the section that you want to go to, find the man page you're looking for, click on it there. Now you're looking at a manual. So, I mean, that does, you can kind of imagine that would be useful. That could be a useful thing to have around on your desktop. But is it any easier than just launching, I don't know, GNU screen or Tmux or something, and then flipping over to a different terminal and then executing man? I just don't know. So I think it's interesting to see these early applications for this environment that and I don't know, like, were people sold on the idea of a GUI, or were people mystified as to why they would need to do, you know, I mean, really, Nano is a more satisfying experience for me, at least, than X-Edit. And I don't love Nano. I mean, I love Nano for what it is. I don't use Nano on a daily basis. So, to me, it just seems like I would probably use Nano over X. Well, no, I would definitely use Nano over X-Edit. I would use Mutt over XMH. I would use Man over X-Man, and so on. So they're quirky little applications, is all I'm saying. And I am curious as to, honestly, I'm curious as to how the GUI, the concept of a GUI, sort of took off when all of these little GUI applications are so transparently just a just a shell over the, I think, more efficient command counterparts. And it could just be everyone else was doing a GUI, so we want a GUI, and so we're going to latch on to it, and that's how it's going to be. Or it could have just been like, well, hey, I can have two windows open at the same time on a screen. That must be nice. Or maybe I get to take my hands off the keyboard for a moment and use a mouse. That's refreshing. You know, it's one of those things where if all you have is a keyboard and text, then something different must look pretty appealing. In today's day and age, now we've got GUIs mostly, so sometimes it looks very appealing to just open up a terminal and just stay in the terminal all day. But that's kind of because we know we don't have to. We can still duck out and put that little movie player off in the corner so we can have something in the background, or we can click over here and play some music, or you know, whatever. So yeah, it's interesting. It's funny. Some of these applications just feel really silly. This one is very cool though. X Message is like Zenity or KDialog. It shows you a message in a little dialog box, and I've just typed X-Man on accident. Quit that. It shows you a little message in a dialog box. So if you do X Message quote hello world close quote, hit return, you get a little alert box that says hello world, and there's an OK button, and then it goes away. When it goes away, it returns zero. So if I say X message, hello world, ampersand, echo, success, then I get the little message, says hello world, I say okay, and then in my terminal it says success. Okay, so you can control how your little dialog box sort of exits by creating your own buttons. So dash button or buttons, I don't remember. I'll try buttons. Buttons, dash button. So I've got X message, quote, hello world, close quote, dash buttons. And then I'll put hello. No, wait, what would, how about if we don't just say hello world? How about if we ask a question? X message, quote, do you like Linux? Question mark, close quote. And then we'll say dash buttons. And the first one we'll say is, yes, I do, close quote, colon, zero. So that's going to be success, colon, zero. So that's going to be exit zero, comma, no space, quote, no, I hate freedom, close quote, colon, one. So that's going to exit one, space, anything else? Actually, no, I think that's all I need to do. So I'll just hit return. Oh, no, I forgot. I wanted to get a response. Okay, so close quote, colon, one. And so then I'm going to do ampersand. So success. So if true, then I will say echo, you are in my Linux club in the terminal. Okay, there we go. So we've got, do you like Linux? Yes, I do. No, I hate freedom. I'm going to click no, I hate freedom. And I get nothing back in my terminal. Silence. But if I do that again and click yes, I do, then in my terminal I get the response, you are in my Linux club. So you can control the, you know, how if you're scripting this, and you probably would be, you can control what kind of error messages you get, or what you can detect the response is what I'm trying to say, through the code that it sends back. Now, technically, the man page says not to use one for some reason. It says one is reserved for failure, I think, like for its own failure, so not to use it. But it also, at the same time, says that the response is actually 10 plus the response code. So to me, it doesn't sound like one is one. It sounds like it's 11. So I'm not too clear on what it's saying, like, don't use one. How would you do that? Do like a -9 error response? I'm not really sure. So that's X message. It seems like a really useful application, honestly, pretty much no matter what. Like, that just seems really useful. I mean, I guess I would rather force someone to have Zenity or KDialog, because this Athena widget set has got to go. I mean, it is just, it's not accessible. It is hard, you know, it's bitmapped, rendered. It's kind of the worst thing in the world. So I don't think I would actually use this, even on a system that I thought, well, that's the only thing I can count on them actually definitely having. I don't know that I would use it, because it's not very good. Like most little X applications, you can control the foreground, the background color, and the default size, and the positioning on screen, and so on, with different options at launch time or something like that. I mean, I think you can, I don't know if you can actually position it exactly on screen, but you can at least say, show it on the center of the screen versus like in some random location. So it does seem like a useful application technically, or theoretically, I should say, but on a technical level, I'm really not sure. I'm not sold on Athena. I mean, and no one is. I mean, you don't see this anywhere outside of literally just X11 sort of like demo packages, basically. All right, next up, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because it's just not very useful either. XMH, this is the one. This is a graphical mail client, or at least that's what it claims to be. I launch it, I get an error message, something about probably not knowing where to look for my mail or something. I don't know. Click out of it. You can write a message by clicking the message button at the top. Nope. Clicking the message menu at the top, clicking and holding, I should say, and then you can compose a message, and it opens up a little very, very basic editor with a to field. There's not a from field. Maybe you can add your own. I don't know if that would work. Or, you know, what's not reply to is actually what I'm thinking of, but either way. And then underneath the little dashes, I guess you put your little message, hello world, and then you probably save the message or send. Yeah, you'd probably send it. But of course, for that, you would want to, what's this saying to me? Comp, command, returned, comp, cannot, exec, vp it, acknowledged. Acknowledged, just the worst. There are buttons for like what folder to look at, like open a specific folder. That doesn't appear to work for me for some reason. I don't know why. It just doesn't. I thought that would be an interesting way. Maybe I could load like my mutt folder in here, but it doesn't even show me, like, I don't understand where I'm supposed to put the folder that I want to open. Do I not understand this interface? Quite possibly, because it just doesn't seem to, it doesn't seem to work. Now, I realize that, you know, what's really happening here is that I would need to configure the mail system that I'm trying to use here. So presumably I could define somewhere in some kind of configuration file. Boy, is it giving me, oh, this is a message check command. That's what it's saying. Okay. It cannot check messages. That's what it's telling me with X message probably. So yeah, it doesn't seem to do the things that I would expect it to do. And I didn't really try too hard to get it to work, because even if I could get this to work, I wouldn't use it in reality. It's just, this is definitely substandard to, for instance, Mutt or Alpine. I would just definitely use those instead of that, for the same reason as I said before. Like, I just don't see the added value of this GUI. And in fact, I think you're losing a lot of features because their editing capability is just not very robust. At least with Mutt, you can look at your editor environment variable or your visual environment variable and use your preferred editor to compose, and then you send it still through Mutt, but I mean the composition is all through, you know, your editor of choice. So I just wouldn't use XMH by any means. I guess it must have been nice for people to have the GUI version of it. I don't know. I don't think it seems, like I say, that there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of added value there in my view. Okay, next up is the, what is next? Xmod map. This is a great one. So Xmod map is a way to modify the way that your keys are mapped. We've seen a lot of these kinds of, a lot of hints about this with XKB definitions and XKB configurations. So this is the direct way to do that. I haven't been using Xmod map in real life for the past couple of years because I've just been using Plasma Desktop, and all of the modifications I need to do to a keyboard are available in system settings, so I just haven't needed Xmod map to step in and do it for me. And frankly, that's probably a good thing sort of going forward, because if X11 is going away, then Xmod map is also going away, right? Because it's entirely dependent upon X. It is a system within X. If you have an Xmod map and you're just using you haven't launched X, then your Xmod map is not happening for you. That's not active. So I mean, I wish there was some other system Well, I know there is, but I wish there was an easy system that just kind of like worked everywhere. I think that would be quite nice. And I mean, maybe there is, I don't know. The way I learned to do this was xmodmap. And the syntax is relatively straightforward, although the vocabulary is not. So the syntax is a key code or an imperative, and then the equal sign, and then a label. So the hard part to understand, and I do not know where this is documented. Honestly, I don't know. I've looked, yeah, and I always end up just finding stuff online. Maybe that's where it's documented, but it's difficult to know what labels are available and also what imperatives are available. So the easy one, the straightforward one, I guess, would be something like key code 37 equals control underscore L with a capital C and a capital L. Not sure if it matters. I don't remember. So key code 37 corresponds to some key on a keyboard. It depends on your keyboard. So I'm going to launch XEV right now. You'll remember that from previous episodes. It launches a little window. You can type, and in your terminal, it gives you feedback on what you just pressed. So I'm going to hit the left control on my actual keyboard, and I'm going to look within all of this and key code 37. So it does happen to be 37 on this keyboard as well, which is kind of nice. So if there was any doubt that key code 37 should send, what kind of signal it should send, I am telling xmodmap to ensure that it sends a control underscore L. Now, why would I do that? Well, I do that because in this xmodmap, I also remap the caps lock key to also be a control L. And so I don't want xmodmap to just assign control L to my caps lock key. I also want it to assign it to my left control key. I don't remember whether for sure, I wouldn't swear that not having one canceled out the other, but given that I had both in here, I'm betting I had some weird quirk about that at some point and wanted to just make sure that both of them got the control L signifier. So the way the more complex sort of part of this would be to, for instance, on a caps lock key, you have to do this imperative. You have to do remove lock equals caps underscore lock, remove control. Oh, this is why I had it. Remove control equals control underscore L. Key code 66, which is my caps lock key, equals control L. Key code 37 equals control L. Add control equals control L. So there's a little bit, I don't know, I feel like it's a little bit, it feels a little, it feels inconsistent. It's not, it just, if you think about like the sort of what's on the left and what's on the right, it just feels a little bit, you know, you remove lock equals caps lock. Like that doesn't, to me, that doesn't quite make sense. But if you, you know, it's not so egregious that you can't figure it out. You just have to kind of relax and understand that this isn't exactly a configuration file and it isn't exactly a script. It's somewhere in between. And that can be confusing. Fortunately, the man page is quite good, and the example page is, or the example section is really good. Like, it spells things out for you. It tells you specifically, to swap the caps lock and control L, here are the commands you need. So it does it for you. And it explains, you know, that you can add control, you can add modifier. It lists the modifiers. So the modifiers are somewhere in here. That's like shift, where the shift, lock, control, mod 1, mod 2, mod 3, mod 4, mod 5. I don't know how you're supposed to know which is mod 1 and mod 2. Honestly, I don't know. And I don't know that they, like, it's, I have a feeling that the variables are too great. Like, who knows what keyboard you have? Who knows what keyboard layout you've told X11 you have? So there I think there is just by necessity a little bit of trial and error, and I think that's okay. Can be frustrating sometimes, but I don't know. My memory of using xmodmap, I mean, I set it up years ago and then just never had to touch it again. Sometimes if I got like a new laptop with a very different keyboard, then I would have to go in and like change a key code or something. But generally speaking, like I set this up a long, long, long time ago and never went back. It was always exactly what I needed. And that was fantastic. That was great. I love XModMap. I think it's super useful. It's one of the more powerful features, weirdly, of Linux, of a Linux desktop. It's just such a pleasure to be able to remap keys on a whim. Like however you want your keyboard to work for you, you can probably make that happen in some way. It might be through XModMap. It might just be through the system settings of your desktop. It just kind of depends on what you're doing and what's easiest at the time. Last package for this episode is XMore. This is another one of those applications that I just don't understand. It just seems in every way inferior to the thing that it is obviously referencing, which is more. So if I do xmore --documents, and I'll have to tab to find a text file. Here's one. No, that doesn't seem like it's going to be very long. Here's a thing. Okay, so here's a text file. No? Okay, there we go. And it opens up that text file in a little Athena widget window with all the text in a text field, and I can read it. It does not wrap lines if I readjust the window, so you're going to have to make sure that it's wide enough for the lines, or you use the little horizontal, horizontal elevator thing, scroll bar, whatever, and that's it. And I couldn't really figure out, like, it doesn't seem to act like More does. So if I type slash to search for something, that doesn't work. Control S to do something, doesn't work. Control N does work. Okay, that's nice to know. Control N and Control P for next and previous, they work. Control E doesn't work. Well, it does something, but not what I would expect. So I don't understand what, like, they're clearly referencing More, but it doesn't work at all like More. And in fact, it seems to have a lot less, fewer features than More. So I don't understand who this possibly could have appealed to. I would never have used it. I don't care if it's GUI. It's just not worth it. It's just not a useful application. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be down on XMore. I just don't get it. The man page has essentially one line. I mean, it's five lines, but I mean, it is the description is XMore is a plain text browser, and that is what it is. And that is all that it is, apparently. Like, I spent a lot of time pressing random buttons trying to insist to myself that this thing was going to work like More, and it does not. And I just can't imagine why you would want XMore when you have More. And remember, dear listener, I spent like a year using, what was it, Most? Like, I was trying to get away from Less, specifically, and so I tried More, I tried Most, and I'm back on Less because that's the best pager. I would never revert, obviously, to More or Most, and so I would doubly never revert to XMore because that is the bottom of the barrel in features. So that's XMore. I don't know. I do not. That one is just like, what is this for? I don't understand. Why is, you know what? In fact, here's what I'm going to do. Sudo remove pkg xmore. Then I'll never have to acknowledge that that exists ever again in my life. And I'm going to do the same thing for xmh. I'm going to do the same thing for xedit. Is there anything else? Mag, I'm going to get rid of that. X-man, gonna get rid of that. There. That felt really refreshing, actually. All right, so cleared out some applications, both in the discussion department and the installation department. And next episode, we're gonna go through the Zorg packages. So like Zorg-CF file, Zorg docs, Zorg server, Zorg Zephyr, that's a really cool one, Zorg XNest. There are some really good ones coming up, actually. So stay tuned, or don't stay tuned, just come back next week. Thanks for listening.